In this podcast, I'd like to talk to you about doing things that are good for you that are not necessarily so pleasant to do or not very attractive to do. Obviously, I promote the idea of practicing in such a way that's good for the body and good for the mind, and in such a way that you are drawn to want to practice. It's so rewarding to you, not only afterwards, but during the activity, that you want to get up and do this each day. But we know from so many areas of life that often, even in the good things that we do, there are parts of it that aren't so easy to do or aren't so attractive to do, but they're still important for us to do. So maybe somebody doesn't like brushing their teeth, but we know that brushing the teeth is a really good idea for a lot of reasons. And some people don't like eating their vegetables. Well, eating vegetables is a non-negotiable, because vegetables is where you get so many of your micronutrients and your phytonutrients. And so for those who don't like these things, it's like, well, I'm sorry, but you need to discipline yourself and do those things, because you're a human and the human body needs those things whether you like it or not. Now, there's a lot we can do for those things that we don't initially find very appealing or attractive to make them more enjoyable or make them more attractive. We just can't end up giving you an excuse not to do them, but we can look for ways to make them more appealing, and or at least to tie them into benefits that we feel later on, so that our reluctance to do those things is balanced out by an anticipation of the reward that will come afterwards for doing it. So if you're running or you're swimming, there are parts of the development process that are more difficult, that are more uncomfortable than others. And so if you were to be following kind of a general fitness and skill improvement program, you would have days where you maybe are swimming longer than what is comfortable, and there might be other days where you're swimming at higher intensities or faster than what is comfortable for you, where the heart rate is pounding and the breathing is a lot more difficult. You're kind of at the edge of your capabilities or comfort zone, and it's going to create some discomfort in the body. If you were lifting weights and you're trying to build muscle mass, then you know that's commonly understood that you're going to have to lift weights in such a way that it becomes somewhat painful, like the burning in the muscles, the putting out great effort of will to lift that weight a few more times, even though your body is kind of urging you to stop because you're getting tired and there's waste products building up in the bloodstream. But that's necessary. Creating those little micro tears in the muscles is necessary for the body then to come back and repair those, and repair them in such a way that the muscle fibers are stronger than they were before. So there's these different forms of discomfort that you could experience, that you would experience in proper training. Now, I'm hopefully training is in such a way that, you know, 80% of the time you're doing stuff that you like to do, that even if it's high effort or exertion, you've developed a mental attitude that looks forward to those activities, that you're not suffering, so to speak, in the midst of those. And then maybe 20% of the time you're doing things that you know that are good for you, but they're not so attractive and you're not so eager to do. And, you know, there may be a little bit of suffering involved because your mind isn't totally eager and aligned with a sense of reward during the activity itself. Now, I have a few examples of how I experienced this. One that hopefully all of you can appreciate right away is we have a need to maintain our spine, the strength of our spine, the alignment of our spine, mobility and strength. And so I make it a part of my discipline that every time before I go running, I do certain plank exercises. And I notice that out of all the different exercises that I may do, all the different strength or mobility or loosening up exercises that I do, I'm least looking forward to doing my plank exercises because those require a lot of effort. I have to really concentrate. I have to make myself hold positions and do certain things in those positions to make them even more dynamic or more effective that are quite uncomfortable. It's the burning. You know, there's no pain of injury, but there's the burning and there's the tiredness and there's the body urging me to stop that I have to resist. And so I'm there doing a plank exercise, and what I do is I hold that position. I'm trying to breathe through my nose, not through my mouth, and I am holding that position for a certain breath count, not counting in my head to seconds, I'm counting breaths. So I know that I can hold a standard plank position for about 45 nasal breaths, fairly slow nasal breaths. And while I'm doing that, I'm also compressing. I'm driving my elbows towards my toes, which is causing an additional contraction on each exhale in those muscles. So it's what one trainer told me is, this is the hard style plank. She's the one that introduced it to me. And I thought, oh, this is a way to do a shorter duration in plank, but to make it harder, to make up for that shorter amount of time. And sure enough, it is harder. And then I do a one-legged plank to kind of get the side of my abdominal region more effectively. And likewise, that one is not so pleasant. So, you know, all the other things, push-ups, pull-ups, any squats that I could do, anything like that, all that stuff is more pleasant, more attractive to me than doing planks. But those plank exercises are gold for helping me have a more stable back, more stable lower back, so I'm less vulnerable to lower back soreness and injury. And in conjunction with doing some thoracic mobility work, just on a foam roller, just rolling my upper spine to keep that part mobile, that this has reduced my headaches by enormous amount. I used to get headaches because I had a ski injury when I was young. Landed on my head and hurt my neck. And I've had headaches off and on over the years from that. But once, many years ago, I started doing plank exercises and strengthening this abdominal region and loosening up my thoracic region. And you know what? Virtually all those headaches went away. I haven't had them in years. And so I know, and then also from running, holding my posture is very, very important to delaying fatigue and maintaining my efficient form. If I were to start to slouch, that would increase the loading on my body, inefficient loading and risky loading on my body. And so it's very important that I maintain good posture. And by doing these plank exercises, not only strengthens me, it tunes up my nervous system to be aware of deviations from the ideal posture. So I'm more aware and more sensitive to any time I start to falter, and I'm able to correct that and protect my posture. So doing plank work not only helps me stay stronger, not only keeps me lean and firm in the middle, but it increases my awareness of good posture as well. So that's really important to me. And so I've made it a part of my pre-running routine. So 3 or 4 days a week, I have plank exercises in there. They're not pleasant. They're burning. Everything in me when I do them is like, you can stop now. Hey, you've done a few. Isn't that good enough? And I'm like, no, I'm going to my count. My count is 45 breaths in this position. I'm going to go to that at least. And so I discipline myself to hold the position. And I'm very thankful afterwards when I do, because it always feels good when I carry out my disciplined task. I feel good about myself. I feel like charged. I feel encouraged to be disciplined. When I carry out one discipline, I'm stronger to be disciplined about other areas of discipline as well. So it builds momentum. In running, I have various training workouts that I do to build strength or stamina or endurance. And so of all those that I do, the speed work day is the one that I find myself less eager to do than the others. So a speed workout may be going out a couple miles warm up, and then I'm gonna, for maybe about an hour, I'm doing intervals of a sort. I'm sprinting for 2 or 3 minutes, and then running easy for 1 or 2 minutes in between those. And you know, I'm looking at my watch to see that my pace is maintaining at a certain level. And you know what? Those are hard to do because I'm going along and it's easy to hold the pace for the first minutes, but that second minute and then that third minute, and your body's just like, hey, you know, if you take, it's like, can't you slow down now? It's all right. It's cool. You're running faster than other people. So I want to slow down, and if I take my attention off the drive, I'll start slowing down without noticing it. And so I have to really maintain my concentration on giving it my best effort every time. And for an hour, that's a long time to be holding that kind of a concentration. And it's, I have to make myself do those sprint intervals. And I'm tired, my muscles are tired when I get done. But that's the whole point. I'm needing to drive my muscles to a point of fatigue so that the system is provoked to strengthen those muscles during my rest in the next day or so. So if I want to be stronger, then I have to do that kind of work. In swimming, then, of the different kind of workouts that I may do, when I do ones that stretch my stroke length, those are the ones that are I'm the least eager to do. Because those are also like lifting weights. When I'm doing sets that require me to hold a longer than comfortable stroke length, that's very much what it would feel like when you're lifting weights and you're having to do repetitions and the weight is starting to feel heavy and you're starting to feel tired. So when I'm really having to hold my streamlined position and I'm having to channel more power through that very careful stroke choreography and maintain very precise switching of from one streamlined position to the other so that I'm not allowing any excess drag to form, and I'm channeling that power into my skate position, and I'm reaching for a further grip point further in front of the body. When I'm doing work like that, that takes all my concentration, and it takes a great deal of willpower, of effort, conscious effort, to keep myself aiming for the exact same stroke count on every single length that I've assigned to myself. And you know what? I get tired. My muscles are tired. Here's the thing. My muscles are tired and I'm feeling the urge, but it's much more mental that I want to give up. I realize I'm not close to actual muscle failure. What I am is getting close to mental failure, just wanting to quit because it's unpleasant. I'm getting tired, it's uncomfortable. And so I'm aware that when I'm doing these workouts that I have to exert a lot of mental effort to just keep myself working despite the urges in my body and mind to say, hey, haven't you done enough? Hasn't it been good enough? But because of experience and doing the same workouts regularly, I know what my targets should be. I know what number of repeats that I should be doing that would be normal for me. And definitely my urge to quit comes before I reach those limits. And if the urge to quit didn't come by the time I reached my assigned number, then I would know I haven't assigned enough. Because the whole point is that reluctance to continue is the indication that I'm starting to work in the zone that's actually going to produce the strength increase benefits that I'm seeking. See, that's the thing that experienced athletes understand, that growth happens in the uncomfortable zone. That as long as it's comfortable, there's not a lot of growth that's happening there. So now, not all of my workouts, not even the majority of them, are doing these workouts that I find the least attractive, but maybe 1 out of 4, maybe 25% of my activity is is something that I have to do that's not so pleasant, not so attractive. But I understand from experience and from study that these are activities that are appropriate and good for me to do if I want to be stronger or faster or more capable of handling difficult running or swimming conditions. And so I do them, and they're a discipline. And there's just really no way around it. The good news is that, as I mentioned before, you can develop a more positive attitude, at least by knowing that, hey, I'm going to feel better afterwards. I'm going to feel better physically. I'm going to feel the strength. I'm going to feel that nice tiredness that lets me know that I did good work. And I'm also going to feel it mentally in my attitude that, hey, I'm going to feel proud of myself that I did it, that I made myself and I checked that off my list. So that at least you can go that far to connect a reward later on to the activity you have to do now. Or you can go further than that to where you actually start to develop ways of paying attention, focal points, ways of staying in the moment of that activity that you can start to derive rewards while you're doing it, not just afterwards. And that comes from more experience. That comes from learning how to play different kinds of mental games in the activity itself that help you stay engaged and intrigued by what's going on inside your own body. Using a watch that gives you some data and also looking for, you know, qualities that you're developing inside the body that correspond to making the effort feel a little bit easier, even though you're maintaining the same level of work. So there's so much that you can do to develop that. So it's not merely learning how to suffer, it's also learning how to reduce the suffering. But you have to go into those activities that are unpleasant in order to develop those skills. You can't get the skills first and then go into the unpleasant activities. You have to go into the unpleasant activities in order to develop the skills. So you can't avoid it. So, the thing is, that as you do these things, as you add these activities to your diet, to your exercise diet, something like 20-25% of the time, you're also going to gain momentum, this mental momentum, this sense of identity even, that says, you know, I am a person who does tough workouts. I am a person who does this. This is normal for me to do difficult activities, to do difficult exercise. And it builds in your psyche. It builds in your sense of identity. So no longer are you, well, I tried those, but you're like, I am a person who does these things. I am an athlete. I am a swimmer. I am a runner. I am a person who does hard work to take care of my body. And you know what? You can take pride in that. It feels good. It gives you strength. It lends itself to that sense of identity in your athletic realm, transfers over into other areas of your life so that when you realize, hey, in this area of my life, I regularly practice handling unpleasant things, uncomfortable things with a good attitude, then you remind yourself that you can do that in other areas of your life, namely in areas of relationship that are even more difficult and offer more unpleasant things than our athletic life will ever provide for us. So I wanted to encourage you in that to not shy away or come up with excuses to avoid unpleasant activities in your sports development that would otherwise be really doing you a lot of benefit. So study up on those things to understand what are good exercises, good activities to do. Enter into them gradually so that you are learning how to do them wisely. You're also learning the signals that your body's going to send so that you can more accurately interpret those, so you're not going too hard too soon. But nonetheless, you are bravely starting to work your way into those uncomfortable activities, into the uncomfortable zone of effort, so that your body is being stressed in a good way and it's going to be provoked to adapt and to strengthen, and you are going to become a stronger, more confident person because of it. All right? So I hope that was encouraging to you, and you know, go try some uncomfortable but good practices or activities, and let me know how it goes.